How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Every time you count them out, they come back. And now we're tied.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
Well, what do you know? Here we are, tied at two, back in Atlanta, which means Jay King is back on the streets of Atlanta, out there just cruising around, I guess.
I wouldn't say cruising around. I'm going back to my hotel room after a bite to eat.
Riding around on a street sweeper, apparently?
Yes. Yes. I don't know what's going on with that noise.
So, we are just, first of all, blowing through our regular season pace. I mean, we were a half-court podcast in the regular season. We are now an up-tempo podcast in the postseason. We are back to preview the next game, but before we do that, let's review Game 4, an amazing Game 4 that featured so many storylines, it's hard to condense it into what we hope is going to be about a 40-minute podcast at most. So let's start with the big thing. Marcus Smart just going completely bonkers in the fourth quarter, an 11-point fourth quarter, shutting down Paul Millsap in the fourth quarter and OT, hitting threes, hitting pump fake, one dribble sidestep threes, and just being all around amazing. You, in the last show, said you enjoyed the Marcus Smart experience. This was a Marcus Smart experience that you could enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, this was a Marcus Smart experience everyone in Boston could enjoy. He scored 8 points in 71 seconds. He guarded who will probably be an All-NBA power forward. And nobody else could stop Millsap. He just shredded Jarebko. Toasted Amir Johnson, hit tough shots over Jay Crowder. Jared Sullinger never had a chance. And Brad Stevens said, Marcus, guard him. And at that point, Millsap was neutralized. The Celtics surged ahead. I mean, what a game that was. The Celtics were down 16 in the third. They were down 6 early in the fourth after Millsap decided to put Atlanta on his back again. And then... then it looks like they're going to win after Jarebko hits that three. Jeff Teague hits two more threes. That was just an outrageous game, a show of resilience on many different fronts from the Celtics. And obviously Marcus Smart was just outstanding.
It's hard to find a bad performance. You have to just look at basically Jared Sullinger had another kind of bad performance. He had a couple of good plays.
I will say he picked himself up. His first quarter was abominable. And he kind of picked himself up a little bit after that. He wasn't nearly as bad after that.
No, but it's still, again, we've said it in every show, and it continues to be true. Tough series for Jared Sullinger. Kelly Olynyk, the other bad performance, because he just, it doesn't look like he's ready to come back yet. And so he played a little bit, and then just, that was it. No more Kelly Olynyk. So we'll have to see what's going on with that tomorrow. But everyone else, to varying degrees, had a great performance. In various times. Like Amir Johnson, again, helped defense, solid guy, some clutch buckets. Evan Turner on that dagger three that Isaiah Thomas hit to end the game, basically. That was set up by Evan Turner, who took advantage of some pretty shaky Hawks defense. But still, Evan Turner made a great move to set that up. Jarebko, obviously, again, great double-double. Smart, we talked about. Isaiah Thomas, obviously great. Lots of great performances. But here we are moving into Game 5 on the road. Let me get into this subject by asking a Twitter question that comes from Aaron. Do they need the crowd, or has Brad figured it out now? So let's look at that. The home crowd was awesome. The Garden was nuts. But the Celtics obviously had their troubles in Atlanta. Brad Stevens has made adjustments, but those adjustments also led to Paul Millsap having a career game. So the two-part question from this is home court. Really, how much is this home court gonna mean to Atlanta? You said Atlanta in seven before. Is this just going to hold? Is home court going to hold? Or has Brad's adjustments just worked out to a point where the Celtics now have a chance to steal one on the road? And I will also add, I was listening to your podcast with Tim Bontemps. If you guys don't listen to that, check that out. But you made a good point that I want you to kind of talk about here about the Celtics adjusting to Paul Millsap and what they might need to do or if they can do anything. So let's just kind of transition to game five with all of that.
Yeah, so I thought Tim asked me, to your point, Tim asked me what the Hawks need to do to adjust to what the Celtics did in game four. And I told him, I kind of felt like the Celtics are the ones who need to adjust after that game. Because obviously Korver missed some shots that he won't miss very often. And a few of his teammates missed shots. The big thing about game four, I thought, was Paul Millsap decided, oh, they're going to play small lineups? Well, I will torture their small lineups. And through three games, he didn't really do much at all to damage their small lineups. And then in the fourth game, he decided, this Jonas Jerebko guy can't guard me. Amir Johnson, he can't guard me either. Like, just no one on their team can guard me. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics balance adjusting to his game and realizing he probably won't do anything close to that again. And even when he did do that, the Hawks still shot 37% as a team. So I think that's going to be the big adjustment is what happens with Millsap moving forward. Do the Celtics keep Jerebko on him? Do they go with Amir Johnson? Do they go back to that smart, like, miracle matchup that worked in the fourth quarter and overtime, but who knows how sustainable that is? So I don't know what the Celtics will do, but somehow they've got to stop Paul Millsap because he was – I mean, he just played with so much force in game four. And I think moving forward, his ability to hurt their small lineups is a huge factor on what happens in the series.
So – I will say this about the Millsap thing. Atlanta really helped the Celtics out. It coincided with Marcus Smart. This is perfect synergy between these two decisions. When Marcus Smart checked Millsap, it coincided with Atlanta basically deciding to throw their offense away and just keep feeding Millsap.
Yeah.
So they just decided, we're not going to do anything that made us any good at all. We're just going to let Millsap go one-on-one with Smart, but Smart is quick enough to kind of cut him off, strong enough not to get back down, and so Millsap basically just has to shoot over Smart, which is okay. He'll do that and be successful if you had to do that for an entire game. But if the Hawks do what they did, part of the reason why Millsap scored 45 is because the Hawks were running an offense and the Celtics were switching, and Millsap took advantage of how the Celtics ran their defense in response to the Atlanta offense. Now, when they stop running the offense, then it changes everything. I would expect that that offense would – they know that. If I know it and you know it, they know it. So they're going to stop making that mistake. So maybe you just deal with Millsap the way – you deal with other superstars the way they used to deal with Dwight Howard or even a LeBron James or anybody like that. If Millsap's the guy that's going to be taking advantage of those matchups, then you just deal with it. And what you do is you stay home on Horford, stay home on Korver, and you just hope and maybe trust a little bit that Millsap will still have a big game, but he won't have that big of a game. And if you take everyone else out of the offense, then maybe you have a shot.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people, there was a lot of talk, especially on Twitter, I thought, about how the Hawks missed open jump shots. And I think to an extent that was true. But the Celtics made them uncomfortable. And you could tell, you know, they were going under screens on Teague and Schroeder. And those guys didn't want to just pull up and fire. And when you make guys come out of their comfort zone and it's playoff basketball, guys get exposed. And a lack of confidence really gets exposed. And I think that happened to an extent with Schroeder and Teague, especially early in the game. Obviously, Teague hit those three big threes and had that boneheaded last play. But we won't dwell too much on that. But, you know, they've missed a lot of open shots. But part of that is the Celtics' activity and how uncomfortable they've made them. And they're for the most part, I mean, obviously, Korver, I thought that one where he had the up fake and then dribbled into a wide-open jumper. And he hit back rim. That was a shot. I mean, I was 100%. I would have bet.
Yeah.
I would have bet my entire life. I would have bet probably my mother's life that was going in, and it bricked. It hit back rim, and those are shots he won't miss all the time.
Korver misses that shot, but Smart makes it.
Yeah, and Smart.
How crazy is that?
Smart makes two of them, but that's basketball, right? I mean, and Smart. For as bad a season as he had shooting-wise, he goes on stretches where he just makes a lot of shots. And sometimes it's like a game-long stretch. Sometimes it's weeks-long stretches. But he goes on stretches where he can shoot. And that's why I think – we've had this conversation before. But that's why you don't, like, give up on his shooting just because he had a really bad percentage-wise season. You look at the times when he hit, you know – 7 out of 12 or 7 out of 13, and you're like, you know what, this guy could become a pretty good shooter. And I mean, he just had an absolutely monster fourth quarter and overtime. I can't say enough about what he did. 26 minutes straight he played. In the last 14 minutes he was guarding Millsap, who is a bruiser, who is a power forward, who is an all-star. And Marcus Smart, a guard, was up to the challenge and still found time to not just score 8 points in 71 seconds and 11 points in the fourth quarter, but then go out and run the offense and have two assists to Amir Johnson to begin overtime.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
He made better plays than this, but my favorite play was the sort of up fake.
When he was wide open at the –
yep.
Yeah.
And you expected him, because he was open and he was hot, and you expected almost like a heat check. And he just fired that two-hand overhead pass, boom, right down to Amir Johnson for the dunk. That was my favorite play that he made. Again, he made better plays, but that was my favorite because it just showed a recognition. It was a smart play. You know, I hate saying that when it's Marcus Smart, but it was an intelligent play for him to make because – you saw that his emotions weren't getting the best of him in that moment. He saw a better play than a shot that's probably a better shot than he has taken for most of the game, and he still made that pass. I just loved that moment. So just a brilliant fourth quarter and overtime for Smart.
My favorite part of Smart's big games is hearing how his teammates are kind of in awe of his competitiveness. Like, that is a one competitive locker room, from Isaiah Thomas to Jay Crowder to Avery Bradley to everybody else. And those guys in that locker room, they're like, that dude, Marcus Smart, is as tough as they come. And, I mean, obviously you can't blame him. Like, that guy, there is no challenge he will not accept. It doesn't matter. I mean, Brad Stevens could tell him to guard Shaq in his prime, and he'd be like, all right, like, bring it on.
Let's give it a shot.
he's something else competitively. And if he ever gets a shot like that, because, I mean, he can guard Teague, he can guard Korver, apparently he can guard Millsap. I mean, if he ever gets a knockdown shot, that kid is going to become special.
I just want him to become an average shooter. 34%, I'm happy with that. And since we're on the topic, and we're here at Old School Shoes, what do you think Marcus Smart's ceiling is? He's 3 months younger than Buddy Hield, by the way. So there are questions about his ceiling and his floor. What do we think Marcus Smart's And it's really early for that, but obviously I think his floor is where he is now. Like, I don't think he gets any worse than this. And if he's this for his entire career, he's going to be a nice player. And he'll mature and everything. His ceiling will be taking better percentage shots and developing a jumper that is more reliable. Like I said, if he becomes a 34 to 35, 36% three-point shooter, how much better is he? How much more does he contribute to the offense? I mean, you're talking about increasing his shooting by 15% from three. So if he can just get to the league average, then I think he gets to be, he becomes a more special player, because then he can add a driving element, because you have to respect his shot, and he has the ability to get into the lane and make some passes, and he can become a 17, 18, 19 point a game guy that gets a few points off of the from the free throw line, hits a couple of layups or mid-range shots, and hits a couple of threes and scrapes together this pretty good season. So who knows? Maybe he becomes even better than that. But I think his ceiling is going to be pretty good if he can get that jumper to fall.
He has an all-star ceiling. I don't know if he'll reach it. I don't know. I mean, obviously he has a lot of work offensively to get there. But he shows like the weird, vague outline of becoming a solid player. And he is already a plus despite being literally one of the most harmful three-point shooters in NBA history this year, considering how much he fired and how little he hit. And he was still a plus on the court. So that just shows you about everything else he does. And once he develops, and assuming he develops, and he will, all the guys in the Celtics organization are impressed by his work ethic, think he will put in the work. And, I mean, that guy, he does some special, special things that nobody else does, and he's only 22. So
Eric Pilato, by the way, sorry to interrupt. Eric Pilato is another one who asked about the ceiling and what would his floor be. And he puts in, he adds this, a poor man's Russell Westbrook question.
That's a bad comparison, because Russell Westbrook plays no D. Russell Westbrook is the freakiest athlete in the NBA, and Marcus Smart is neither of those things. I think Russell Westbrook is a weird comparison there. I wouldn't say that at all. I would also say, I want to know what – I mean, I don't want to take a shot at Bob Ryan right now because he's Bob Ryan. But I would love to know what Bob Ryan thinks right now about Marcus Smart, because he was the one speaking out about Smart, you know, a couple of months ago, and how he doesn't think he's a leader, more of an agitator or whatever he said.
Yep.
And, yeah, I think he's a leader, Bob. I think the point guard who guards Paul Millsap and shuts him down while he's in the best game of his life, I think that's a leader.
Yeah. It's funny. We were talking about that. It's like, with all due respect, sir.
Yeah.
You're way off base.
Like, please,
on this
Mr.
particular
Ryan,
point.
Please, yeah. Mr. Ryan, I love everything you've ever done except for this. But
yeah.
But in this, I object.
2 months ago, he was getting the Rondo treatment. He was, and that's what I said. That here we go. He's getting Rondo'd, but now he's.
But here's the thing, Rondo gave people reasons to give him the Rondo treatment.
Right.
And Smart, it was just kind of like he was missing a lot of shots, and
right.
At some point, the true you is what people react to. And so I think, you know, it was only a matter of time until Smart's spirit, obviously his spirit, the Celtics need his spirit, and the Celtics, they're lifted by his spirit. I mean, there was little he didn't do yesterday, and it seemed he's one of those, it's not a lot of guys in the NBA, not a lot of guys in the United States of America who play hard enough that they can lift an entire team just by doing that. And Smart, I mean, the way he kept Millsap off the glass, even, it wasn't just the man-to-man defense. It was the box outs, the rebounds, he was scoring on the other end. That was one of the most remarkable performances from a guard, and not one of the best, I think, because there have been better performances from guards, but just the fact that he's a point guard, somewhat shooting guard, maybe, whatever he is. He was guarding an all-star power forward. Nobody does that. That doesn't happen.
And Marcus Smart had 8 rebounds in the game. Evan Turner had 7 rebounds in the game. The Celtics perimeter guys were rebounding. That was big.
Yeah, they need to, because obviously in this series, they're going as small as possible, and they're going to need that. And it's become a really fun series, hasn't it? Those last two games were so much fun.
They were immensely fun. And considering that after the first two games, people were asking about whether we're playing for pride, now we're playing for the series. So this has been just amazing, an amazing turnaround. So now, can the Celtics do this on the road? Can they figure this out in Atlanta? Can they capture this magic? Feel like this is a team. I love talking about home court advantage and the crowds and all of that stuff. And the Celtics crowd, again, was amazing and is almost always awesome. But sometimes I feel like that can be overrated. Not with this team, I don't think. I think they really, truly do feed off of that crowd. Because you see, in the midst of those moments, they're looking at the crowd. They're raising their arms. They want more.
Yeah, and it's like that. Honestly, when Isaiah Thomas hit that three in overtime that put them up, was it 7 in the final minute? My chair was shaking from all the cheers inside the TD Garden. And
that's amazing.
It was literally shaking. I was trying to finish my game story, and my chair was wobbling back and forth because of all the cheers that were going on. And LeGarrette Blount is like fired up on the court. Even Bill Belichick has to smile about this Celtics team. It is a fun group, and they get going on these runs, and they have droughts too. And it's like, honestly, it's like whenever the game gets weird, that's when they're at their best. When there's like some weird thing that happens, whether it's Marcus Smart guarding Paul Millsap or whatever else, that like the weirder the game gets, the better the Celtics are. They just need to weird things up. In a conventional game, I don't think they beat the Hawks, but you muck things up, you get weird things going on. You get Isaiah Thomas, a point guard, coming off pin down screens for 12 3-point attempts. You get the weirder things get, the more the Celtics thrive. And to do that on the road is different. As you said, they really do feed off the Garden energy, and they have to be better. They have to be better. They can't have those droughts where they get beat 14-0 at the beginning of the third quarter, because you're not going to have that same rush, I don't think, on the road that you have at the TD Garden. It's just not going to happen. That it's so much tougher when you don't have those fans at your back and giving you that extra energy. So they have to be better. Can they do it? Yes. They can. That's 16 point. I'm still amazed at that 16 point comeback. Paul Millsap had the Garden completely silent. He was an absolute murderer for 2 quarters, 3 minutes. And then he came back in the fourth and put him back up 6. And they still came back. It was just a remarkable game. It was a really, really fun game to watch.
Yeah, I got to say, at the beginning of the third quarter, I tweeted out that started to feel like the first quarters of games 1 and 2, because
you know what it felt like to me was the LeBron game when he came in game 6 with Miami and had the 45 points. It was like no matter what the Celtics did that night, LeBron was going to get his. And it kind of felt similar with Millsap. Obviously, he's no LeBron,
but he was just as devastating, and he was getting whatever the hell he wanted, and he was just shutting the Garden crowd up, and then the Celtics came back somehow.
I just wonder if Millsap's going to be hitting some of those same shots, because he got fouled and he was throwing up some and ones that I felt like had no business going in. It's hard to ask a player to go out there and score 45 points again. Just like Isaiah Thomas scored 42. You know he's not going to score 40-something again, or you think he's not going to score 40-something again. So the goal is, I think, you just try – I almost say you just kind of do the same thing.
Stay the course.
And dare him to do that again, because that's such a special performance. I mean, that Paul Millsap is a really, really good player. No doubt. Like you said, he's an all-NBA player. No doubt. But is he back-to-back 45-point game player? You almost have to dare him. You say, okay, you did this. Do it again. And try it again. And see if... Because what are you going to do? How are the Celtics going to counter that? Do they counter that? Are you going to not start Amir Johnson? Are you going to try somebody else? Is Kelly Olynyk suddenly going to be healthy enough that you might radically change things and see if he can do something with his height at least to bother Millsap? I doubt that. So what do? Other than throw Jarebko out there again, because Jarebko is necessary for that offense to space the floor, and you say, fine, we're going to do this thing because it's getting our guys off on offense. I dare you to try that again and see if he can. And if he goes through a quarter and a half or two quarters of 40-point pace again, then you try something at halftime. Or you just say, throw your hands in the air and say, I don't know. We'll just have to hope that we can repeat history, I guess. But I personally say try it again, Paul. See if you can do it again. I don't think you can.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he fell shy of 45 in game five. But the one thing I will say is the small lineups that he probably should hurt a lot. And so that was Atlanta's counter after Boston went super small and stayed super small for all of game three. They came back and said, Paul Millsap, you have to play with a lot of force. And he did. And whoa, he was good. So that would be my counter. He's not going to have 45 again. He's never had 45 before. So, but he could have another big game. And that's okay. They have to guard everybody. I think they have to do a better job on Korver. He got a decent amount of open looks. But they've done a pretty good job on everyone else. And I think Jeff Teague is an X factor now, because if he got hot after those three threes that he hit, that's a game changer, because he's been really reluctant to shoot. And the Celtics have been daring him to shoot. And so far, until those three threes late in game four, he really, really didn't want to shoot. He's clearly looking to get to the basket. And that makes sense. He's really fast. He can get to the basket against most guys. But the Celtics, with Jarebko out there on the switch, he's doing a good job of keeping Teague from getting that easy bucket. And if Teague starts hitting threes, that's a game changer. So that's one thing to look at. And then Celtics just have to keep scoring. When Isaiah Thomas was on the bench in game four, my goodness, things got ugly for a while. So they need to figure out a way not to have droughts and just keep scoring, at least consistently. Not obviously they're not going to have a huge scoring output. These are two of the best defenses in the league, and the Celtics don't have a super high-powered offense. But they can score, and they have to do it better than they have. They have to play offense better than they did, I think, in game four.
Yeah, I mean – I keep saying Kelly Olynyk. I'd love to have Kelly Olynyk back. Hopefully, I hope he's healthy, because that helps that second unit a lot.
Yeah, but I don't think you can't count on anything from him after what he looked like in game four.
I know. I'm that's a more hopeful statement than anything else. I will say that I like the idea of what Brad Stevens has been doing with Isaiah Thomas, because for most of the regular season, he has been playing Isaiah the entire first quarter and resting him. And lately, he's been pulling Isaiah out with 2.5 minutes or so to go and giving him a little extra break around the quarter break. So he still gets more rest, but he's not missing as much game time. So that might be a way to kind of inflate his minutes played without causing him too much more stress on his body and making him work too much harder. So that's one little solution. I will say that one adjustment that's really gone underrated, I think, over the past couple of games is that the starting of Evan Turner and bring the ball up and starting Isaiah off the ball, which is something that we've talked about a lot on the show and on our respective sites. That, I think, has helped Isaiah a lot, because he hasn't had to work as hard to get the space that he needs. It's different because he's coming off of screens, and I mean, right away, even if the tip comes back to him, he's giving it up to Evan Turner and going off and doing his thing. So I think that adjustment offensively has been about as important as any other adjustment that Brad Stevens has made.
Yeah, that's been huge. And obviously in game three, it was the biggest when they had him coming off pin downs. He was like, they almost featured him like Korver almost. It was like he was coming off pin down screens. They told him to fire away. And he was brilliant that night with 42 points. And they needed basically every one of them. How hard has it been to beat the Hawks in this series? I mean, they needed 42 out of Isaiah in game three. They needed Smart to reach some other planet that, in game four. I mean, these Hawks are a damn good team. And these are two super evil. If you look at all the stats, it's like points, they're almost exactly the same. Rebounds, almost exactly the same. It's like offensive rating, defensive rating, almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like these teams are so evenly matched, and it's a dogfight, and it's fun. It is fun.
And the Celtics are doing it without Avery Bradley or Olynyk.
Yeah, and what's cool is the Hawks they have the same starting lineup. They don't need to change anything. Their bigs are flexible enough to make things work. And the Celtics are just kind of tinkering with everything. Like, oh, let's just throw Jonas Jerebko in the starting lineup. And, oh, we'll try Smart. That didn't work out too well. Let's throw Turner in the starting lineup. And screw it. Let's throw Smart on Paul Millsap.
I mean, it's desperation.
Yeah.
But this is where, God, I wish I could remember off the top of my head who tweeted this. Somebody did, and I want to give him credit, but it's not my thing. He said, it's not that Brad Stevens should get credit for the brains of starting Evan Turner and Jonas Jerebko. It's that he had the balls to do it.
Yeah.
And that is a huge statement, and an incredibly accurate statement, because so many coaches are afraid of doing something like that because they're like, dance with who brought you, you know, like that. Just, they don't have the balls to say it's not working in this series, and it doesn't matter who I used to start. I'm going to go with these guys, and the person I sit down is going to have to understand that for this particular series, for this particular game, or this particular play, however macro you want to get, that is what's important. So credit to Brad Stevens for, A, having conducted himself in a way over the entire course of his coaching career so far that guys understand that, and B, having the balls to pull the trigger on some of these moves, because I tweeted out, time to unleash Marcus Smart on Paul Millsap, because I get to tweet crap like that, and no one really takes that seriously, but holy crap, he did it, and he had the balls to make a move like that. It's desperation time, and he's like, screw it. This has to work, or nothing's going to work, and it worked. So, you know, we talk about Brad's analytics and blah, 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 and some of it's just having the guts to try something new, and he's doing it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And we talked about this before the series. Like last year against Cleveland, it took him until game four to put Crowder in the starting lineup, even though it was clear they needed Crowder in the starting lineup from the first game. And I think he really learned from that. And he's been a lot quicker on the switch trigger in this series. You know, obviously he yanked the starting lineup like 3 minutes into game one. He changed it in game two, obviously, because they needed to with Avery Bradley. But then he changed it for real in game three. He went to Jarebko at center. He's gone to Marcus Smart on Paul Millsap.
It's amazing.
I still laugh. I laugh about it.
Of course.
It's preposterous. And it worked somehow. And I do think he's been really a lot more aggressive with his changes. And maybe that's because he needed to be because, you know, Avery Bradley got hurt and the normal – formula, I guess, wasn't at all an option. But I do think he'd already decided that the big lineup wasn't going to work, even heading into game one. So, and then he was quick on the trigger when it didn't work. So I think he's had, people were all over him after game two, I feel like. And I thought that was a little unfair. Yeah. because you know, you're shorthanded and you don't want to run the wings too thin, but now he's doing it and they kind of have to do it. And Jarebko's playing 30 plus minutes a game. He's had two consecutive double doubles for the first time since his rookie season, which is crazy. The last time he did it, the second one came against Tracy McGrady in the New York Knicks.
That's amazing.
Which is I forgot T-Mac even played for the Knicks, to be honest.
Right. Right.
And so, Jonas Jarebko, a key piece of this whole turnaround.
J. King called it.
Yeah, Jonas Jarebko
on series. The Rain and Jays. J. King called it.
Yeah, I didn't think at all he would get two double doubles.
Stop! See, this is where you gotta stop. You're too humble. You just stop it. I called it.
Fine.
That's it.
Fine.
That's all the internet needs to know. J. King called it. Boom, I'm going to make a T-shirt. J. King called it with you on the phone.
Fine, I knew it. I knew he was going to get these double doubles. I knew he was going to hit the huge three toward the end of regulation of game four. I knew he was going to hit the fadeaway. That fadeaway, where did that fadeaway come from?
It's amazing.
The turnaround, like, what? Who are you, Jonas Jarebko?
Well, let's bring this to Twitter. Jason Stackhouse. Who asked, do we owe part or most of Jonas's recent play to his newer, bolder haircut? That's the answer right there. It's the hair.
I think it was just the vote of confidence from J. King, to be honest.
I think so.
Yeah.
You're so funny because you're humble, yet you'll drop the third person reference. It's a nice little dichotomy there.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those like ironic third person references. Like,
right.
like meant to be funny, like I'm being a moron. I'm calling myself J. King, type of thing.
I will say, since you brought it up, the all of those Brad Stevens still hasn't won a playoff game pieces out there, that was a little silly. I just want to just address that because I'd forgotten about it. I didn't even read any of them. But the whole notion that Brad Stevens with a ragged seventh seed last year facing the Cavs that got swept, and then the two games that happened in Atlanta, regardless of the injuries, to hold that against Brad Stevens, that was just a little ridiculous. It's not like this was the Raptors, and you're just looking at that like, oh my God, what's wrong with these guys? They should be better than this. No one expected the Celtics to win any of those six playoff games. So that was such a crap trolling thing to write after game two. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Before we wrap this up, we've got some, you know, mostly kind of like tongue-in-cheek questions and comments on Twitter. Although this one's interesting, just a kind of funny thing. After 86 games, including the playoffs, Celtics, Heat, Hornets, and Hawks still have identical records, which is just an interesting little note that even in the middle of the playoffs, they're all still matching records.
Somehow, whichever team advances is going to like finish with the perfect amount of wins and losses in the next round, so that they all still finish even.
It's some weird thing like that, right?
It's gonna. Every team's gonna be zero games back at the end of it. It has to be, because those teams were like neck and neck for the last month of the regular season.
I can't recall anything like that ever, where four teams finish the season like that and still it having all. Now they're all playing each other and they're all 2-2. I guess that makes sense, but I've just never seen that before. So, what else do we have on Twitter? Another Marcus Smart comment. Is Marcus Smart all first team or second team all NBA next year? Obviously first team.
MVP.
MVP?
Yeah.
Solid. Solid. I'm just thinking that, you know, maybe Anthony Davis coming back has something to prove, and maybe he'll steal some votes. But who knows?
Wasn't it funny though that, you know, Smart has the ridiculous flop in Game 3, and then Game 4 he plays a guy 5 inches taller and who knows how many pounds heavier, and doesn't flop at all.
It just
doesn't budge. Like, come on, Marcus. Yeah. You just lost
Kyle
all
Korver
credibility in the future because Paul Millsap can't move you, but you acted like Kyle Korver.
Kyle Korver shot him out of a cannon into the stanchion, three rows deep. But Paul Millsap's trying to back him down. He's like a brick wall. Can't be moved. Hilarious.
Marcus Smart, man. That dude is just human entertainment at all times.
But he really is. The reality is that he is a brick wall. Like, I feel like I can get a half-court running start on him, hit him at full speed, and I'm the one that would be bouncing back. Like, that's just – he's just huge. He's just solid.
I would truck his ass.
Okay, gaining composure again. Back to Twitter. Let's look at. How am I going to say this name? It's Alon. Whatever. Other than KG, who do you like the Celtics to sign this summer? We're getting into free agency. We just had an amazing game 4, two huge home wins, tied at 2 going back to Atlanta, and we got multiple questions about the Celtics offseason. No matter what happens,
the thirst is real.
Still focused on the next person. So let's just blow through all of these. We've got, who do they think the Celtics want to sign next summer? At this point, is Isaiah Thomas untradeable? This comes from Brendan. At this point, is Isaiah Thomas untradeable to Danny or no? What about Evan Turner? At Jake Gongora, do you see the Celtics re-signing Turner? Who are some other under-the-radar free agents they should go after? I don't want to get too far into this because this is more like a playoff podcast.
Yeah,
we really have addressed a lot of this in past shows.
Let's talk about the playoffs, people. Let's talk about Marcus Smart. Let's talk about Isaiah Thomas averaging 28 in the playoff. Let's talk about Brad Stevens. Let's talk about the Celtics versus the Atlanta Hawks in the best playoff series in the NBA first round. None of this off-season talk. We'll have enough time to drool about Kevin Durant and talk about God knows who else. But come on. One thing I do want to point out, Danny Ainge on Twitter, two active players that he's following that have never played for the Celtics, Kevin Durant and Mike Conley, impending free agents.
That's hilarious.
Which is hilarious.
That is hilarious. So we're getting to a point, and somebody actually – I'm not going to look it up now, but somebody said, hey, check out Danny Ainge's last like. And it was some scouting report about a player, and I was getting onto a train, and I didn't have time to look at it. But we're at a time now where the general manager on Twitter, his likes and follows are going to be scrutinized as potential insight into the next move. So welcome to 2016, I guess. But
his last like is a scout report of Jamal Murray.
That's who it was.
Jamal Murray. I mean,
okay, sure. That means
and then
whatever.
One of his other ones is the Hassan Whiteside free agency dilemma. Oh,
please.
Man, Danny Ainge is just trying to send hints on social media.
I feel like Danny Ainge is a smart guy. I feel like he's just liking things to randomly throw people off and get. First of all, how do you even find this stuff out? There are people out there on Twitter who are just constantly looking at his likes to see what he's liking. I've never checked anyone's likes before. Is that a thing that people do?
I don't know, man, but that is funny. Jamal Murray, who's a top five pick, probably, and the Celtics will have a top five pick, probably. that's just absurd. Danny Ainge just using social media in a big way, coming in strong.
I love it. Let me just recap for the people who have asked the questions. These have been our thoughts on these questions that you asked. We've already said that Evan Turner, we're going to have to wait and see if they can get a better shooter that can do some of the same things. They should go after that guy. But who knows? Maybe they'll re-sign him. They're going to hold off on that. Nobody is untradeable, depending on who they're trading for. But we'll see. And who should the Celtics sign in free agency? Shooters, scorers, whatever. That's basically the recap.
John, for those who have asked. I just told people who asked to piss off.
So
don't overrule me here. Let me get my rant. And
I gave it to you. I gave you the rant. Yeah, I'm just recapping.
Let it hold. You can't let. Have
We're
me
here for
that
the people,
rant.
Man.
And no. We are the people. The people are not as powerful as we are, John. We are the ones who control this podcast, man.
Wow.
Yeah, don't go behind my back and start going against my rants again.
The power. Jake King. Wow.
Yeah.
Freaking hilarious. Okay. So, all right. That, I think, is enough for our show. We're looking at the Celtics Game 5 in Atlanta on Tuesday night at 8:30. I'm glad personally on a personal level that it's at 8:30 because I didn't have to rush around and go crazy trying to watch the game. But so many people are like, yeah, put it at 6 because like be like 10 people there. And the Hawks retweeted. It's funny. B retweeted something. The Hawks retweeted a guy who said, we need that home court to be as loud as the Celtics.
Yeah,
and,
good luck with that.
Fans step up. So the Atlanta Hawks retweeted this guy's tweet. And 77 people ended up retweeting it, which for the official team to retweet something like that and have 77 people ultimately retweet the thing, she's like, yeah, all 77 people are going to be really loud, and the rest is going to be Celtics fans. I don't know, man. Maybe I should just save this for another time because it's about time to wrap up the show. The Hawks fans during the regular season are nowhere to be found. Regular season, that crowd is dead. That building is empty. And I know that there are some really hardcore, great Celtic Hawks fans out there. I'm not talking about you guys. You guys are out there, but you're the only ones there. And the rest of the building is empty. That place is just terrible. And only during the playoffs do they show up.
During the playoffs, it's a weak atmosphere, too. I mean, that is a suspect crowd. I tweeted something about it, and like one of the Hawks blogs picked it up and fired back at me a little bit. But even then, nobody really responded to me. I think everyone just really realizes, like, yeah, that crowd sucks. Especially
you know what?
They must see Boston and be like, wow, why can't we be like this? Al Horford must go to Boston and be like, you know what? This is what NBA basketball is supposed to be like.
Right. Sign Al Horford in Boston and move the Atlanta Hawks to Seattle, and let's rectify all of this.
Oh, you're trying to move them now, huh?
Move the Hawks to Seattle.
Ooh.
Move them. Done. That's it. The city of Atlanta, I know they're a big market, and they're not going to move, but they don't deserve the Hawks. They don't show out for the Hawks. So move them to Atlanta, move them to Seattle, and just put them in a city that will appreciate NBA basketball. Done.
Done. Especially they're a good team.
They're a good team.
They're a fun team. They scrap.
They were a 60-win team last year.
They share the ball. They're a fun team.
Yeah. They don't deserve the Hawks, man. Atlanta does not deserve the Hawks. But that's okay because they're not going to have Hawks basketball for much longer because the Celtics are winning this series. And we will be here for every damn game on the Rain and Jays podcast because you demand it, no matter where we are, streets of Atlanta, wherever. So we'll be here after game five. We'll see you next time on the Rain and Jays podcast.
It's been real, folks.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.